tumble over, turn nine times around, and the poor old dog was drowned. I'm the last of the Irish Rover.
All right, we are back at the Global Music Show, talking about Ireland today with guest Professor Nicholas Allen. Will you tell us a little bit about what we just heard?
Yeah, well, never let it be said that I trade on cheap stereotypes of Ireland, but that was the Irish Rover with a great and unforgettable line. There was Slugger O'Toole, who was drunk as a rule. An idea, I think, of the Irish ship of state somewhat astray in the 19th century between Ireland and America. And I guess a lot of the stuff that we're going to listen to in the next hour connects that Ireland to those other places of the world, like the United States, also to Australia, perhaps even to Canada.
Great. So what will we be listening to next?
We're going to listen to a great track by the Dubliners, who were formed in O'Donoghue's pub in the early 1960s, to the main members, Ronnie Drew and Luke Kelly. Ronnie Drew is still with us, thankfully. Luke Kelly, sadly, is not. It's called The Rising of the Moon, and it's about the rising of 1798.
What happened in the rising of 1790?
A lot of spent emotion and perhaps not much else, but there was a Republican rising in various parts of Dublin, also the north of Ireland and in Wexford. And the idea was that, like France and America before us, we might have liberty, equality, and fraternity free from the empire.
Great, and so that's what we're going to be listening to, or listening to a track about?
Yeah, well, I wore my Irish lit class yesterday. I'll be trying to get them all rised up, so this is my attempt to do that.
All right, great. Well, let's take a listen.
And his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together at the rising of the moon. And come tell me, Sean O'Farrell, gathering is to be at the old spot by the river, quite well known to you and me. One more word for signal token, whistle out the marching tune with your pike upon your shoulder at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder at the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud-walled cabin, eyes were watching through the night. Many a man, the heart was beating for the blessed morning light. Murmurs rang along the valley to the banshee's lonely croon, and a thousand pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. And a thousand pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon. All along that singing river, that black mass of men was seen. High above their shining weapons flew their own beloved green. To every foe and traitor, whistle out the marching tune, and hurrah, me boys, for freedom. 'Tis the rising of the moon, 'tis the rising of the moon, 'tis the rising of the moon, and hurrah, me boys, for freedom. 'Tis the rising of the moon.
All right, we are back. That song was about the revolution in 1790 in Ireland. Will you tell a little bit about the pub scene in Dublin that these songs were a part of?
Yeah, well, I suppose, I mean, it was in 1798, this rising, and something that seems quite far, I suppose, from Ireland of the 1960s. When you think of the 1960s, you don't think of people walking about with pikes on their shoulder, mm-hmm. waiting for the French to arrive in off the sea. But there's always been, I think, a certain kind of participant nature to Irish culture, particularly in the ballad and the singing and the musical tradition of people joining in and of keeping that past sense of previous event and history alive in the contemporary. So there's a curious bridge, I think, in these songs between the far history the revolutionary history, the failed history of all those risings, and I suppose the present freedoms of the Irish state, such as they are.
Could you describe what the nature of the Irish ballad is, and what makes a ballad a ballad?
It's a very good question, and probably the best person to ask at the moment is Paul Muldoon.
Yeah.
If you know him, the famous Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, he's up in Princeton University now teaching creative writing. Seems to have taken the lyric form very much into his contemporary poetry. But just the idea, I think, of the refrain is very important. Also the idea of the narrative, and those narratives very much relate to Ireland's nationalist history, mostly, I suppose, in most respects.
So it's about a sense of participation between the audience and the performer?
Yeah,
in part, at least.
Yeah, and I guess that's also why then you might want to think that Ronnie Drew sounds like Marlboro Man, because he smokes so many cigarettes in dark and dingy pubs, and there's definitely an idea to kind of a alcohol-fueled camogie.
I see. So what are we going to be hearing up next?
Next, we're going to go to a track by The Chieftains, which is called The Session, which is the first track of The Chieftains' 8th album. The Chieftains are an interesting alternative to this in that they had a much more, I suppose, scholarly approach to their music. There was a great movement in Ireland after independence in the 1920s and 30s to collect old songs, to collect tunes that were still about, and the Chieftains have really mastered, I think, the reproduction of those songs and their sounds.
Great. Well, let's take a listen. You're listening to WXYC, and this is the Global Music Show.
Thank you.
You are listening to WXYC, and this is the Global Music Show. With me today is Professor Nicholas Allen, and we just heard the Chieftains, and they brought us the song, The Session by, excuse me, they brought, this was the Chieftains. All right, so why don't you tell me a little bit about the instrumentation in the Chieftains and why it's particular to Ireland?
Well, you can see, or you can hear at least, that they played a lot of instruments, so that sounds slightly unusual, I guess, to a non-Irish ear, and maybe perhaps to some Irish ears also. There was the flute, the byron, which is the Irish drum, which is a skin put over a circular wooden frame and played with a wooden form of stick that you use by moving your wrist quickly. The uilleann pipes, which are a bit, I suppose, like a version of the bagpipes, except you don't blow into them in quite the same way, and you hold them under your arm rather than in front of you. And also the fiddle. And we were talking just while the music was playing about the skill of these musicians, the Chieftains, I suppose, in some respects. The Dubliners are like the punk rock version of Irish music, where the Chieftains are the classical players, and you can hear that very much there, I think.
Yeah. Now, even in an instrumentation like the Chieftains just had, it seems as if there's a meaning or perhaps a narrative hidden within the music, even though there's no lyrics. Is that the case, or what?
Yeah, well, I think most definitely so. There are the different structures of the different types of music being played: jigs, reeds, hornpipes, such like. And often, what happened in these recordings of these tracks, at least, and also whenever they play live, that these things are put together in different forms and formats. And mm-hmm. part of the innovation of the Chieftains was in selecting the songs in the first place and making them into some kind of narrative track.
Yeah, and the Chieftains are an Irish supergroup, and they've done a lot of collaborations with a number of artists, including Van Morrison, which we're going to hear in just a moment. How crucial is the collaborative effort between various bands and musicians to the Irish tradition?
Well, I suppose going back to that question about the traditional scene in the pubs, where at least they have some of their root or some of their popularity from the 60s on, which is the sense that if you go to a session of an evening, it's not that you know who's definitely going to be there or who you're going to hear. Different people turn up on different nights and mm-hmm. different states at different times and come in and out with different instruments. So there's always something, I think, improvisational about it. But I guess that's probably true of a lot of folk music.
Yeah. All right. So up next, we're going to hear I'll Tell Me Ma by the Chieftains featuring Van Morrison. And so thank you for listening to the Global Music Show on WXYC. That was the Chieftains featuring Van Morrison And so that was I'll Tell Me Ma. Will you tell us what that song is about?
Well, I only got you to play it so I could hear you transit.
Yeah,
I'll tell me Ma. Because actually I have the pleasure, not for me at least, I come from Belfast, is hearing the kind of the savour of the accents. And Van Morrison came from the same part of East Belfast that I grew up in as well. And that great line, Albert Mooney says he loves her. There's a great kind of grit in the way that they speak. But they were having fun there too, because if you noticed at the end, that kind of off-key fade out that they did.
Yeah, I noticed that. It kind of, the whole pace of the song switched up right at the end.
Yeah, well, they changed it. I'll Tell Me Ma is an old Belfast street ballad. In fact, my own mother used to sing it to me when I was small. I have kind of a fondness for it for that. But at the end, they go off into a song called The Sash. And The Sash is a song of Protestant supremacy. It's to do with wearing your orange sash to celebrate the victory of the Protestant King William over the Catholic King James at the Battle of the Boyne in 1690. And so for the chieftains, an Irish traditional band, to play with Van Morrison from East Protestant Belfast and do this version of The Sash at the end is kind of a nice little ironic twist, I think.
Is that the sort of thing that was openly noticeable to the general audience at the time?
Oh, I think absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's an inescapable tune. The tune itself actually apparently comes from a much older Irish song, but the lyrics are sure to zo, but it is beautiful, and the colours there are fine. It was worn in Derry Acrim, in Skillin and the Boyne, and these are all victories of the Protestant succession, so it has a particular charge. But I think, in a way, it's curious that this record, and I think done in the early 80s, I suppose presupposes some of those later accommodations that came to an Ireland in the 1990s, thankfully.
Yeah. And so Van Morrison was singing with the chieftains on there, and I'm more familiar with Van Morrison's jazz-natured music. Uh-huh. Can you talk a little bit about the introduction of jazz music into Irish culture?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting moment. I suppose jazz came mostly in the 1940s, and it came with the GIs. Seamus Heaney's written about this a little bit. He grew up in a part of rural Northern Ireland, where a lot of the American soldiers were stationed as they prepared to go into Europe for the liberation of Europe from the Nazis in the Second World War. They brought with them music, and the music stayed after they left. And the jazz clubs in Belfast before the Troubles started in 1968 were a huge musical scene. And the next thing we're going to hear is actually one of Van Morrison's early band, Them. They're playing Baby Please Don't Go, which is an old 1935 blues classic, I think, by Big Joe Williams, if I remember rightly.
Mm-hmm.
But with a particular, again, kind of Belfast take.
All right, great. And when we get back, we can talk a little bit more about Belfast, because... And you said that's where Van Morrison is from, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you think about those beautiful early songs, Cypress Avenue, that's all part of the mindscape.
Great. Well, we'll talk more about Belfast just after we hear this song by Them. This is Baby, Please Don't Go.
Please don't go.
We are back. This is the Global Music Show on WXYC, and we just heard a track by them, an early band with Van Morrison. That was Baby Please Don't Go. All right, Nicholas, would you tell us a little bit about Belfast and the culture there and where this music came from?
Yeah, well, we were just saying, as we were talking about the idea of Baby Please Don't Go down to New Orleans, and how could you possibly compare New Orleans to Belfast? And Belfast being a shipbuilding, industrial, northern city, and that arc through Manchester and Glasgow as much as anything else. But the idea of the American South actually has always been very prevalent and important, I think, is some kind of a freedom, curiously enough. Mm-hmm. The idea of that kind of a sunny South where other things might happen. But it's funny, the jazz clubs itself, where they used to play the music. I mean, Belfast famously was a city of hard men, men who worked in the shipyards and the rope factories. And it still, I think, likes to think of itself a little bit like that. I'm not curious why they used to have dancing, which was all shoulders and shuffle.
Yeah. So the kind of hard culture of Belfast, did that transfer over into the, were these guys the same ones enjoying jazz at night as the ones who are like the blue collar workers?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, they were one and the same, do you know? And I suppose it was blue collar music, to put it that way.
All right.
But of course, I suppose the next thing I should say is that I'm doing what all Belfast people do, which is you get asked on the Irish radio show and turned into a Belfast show. So, in deference to my wife, who's from Cork City, I thought I better have Rory Gallagher on next. He's
a great
Irish blues guitarist.
So you would pronounce that differently. How would you pronounce? I would say Rory Gallagher. How would you say that?
Yeah, well, I suppose the GH would be soft for me, but we'd have to ask the people from Cork to be Cork like that.
All right. Well, we're going to hear Bought and Sold by Rory Gallagher, and thanks for tuning in to the Global Music Show, Irish Stew. Oh, and before we continue, I would just like to say that this is sponsored by the Center for European Studies, and they are founded in 1994, and they are a European Union Center of Excellence. But anyhow, let's get back to the music. This is Rory Gallagher on WXYC.
You're just a three-card tree.
That was Rory Gallagher singing. Let's see here. Bought and Sold. So, Nicholas, could you tell us a little bit about Rory Gallagher's life?
Yeah, well, I mean, the little I know of it, but I mean, Gallagher came from Cork, which is the second city of Ireland, down in the south coast, a very beautiful place, a very beautiful city. And Gallagher grew up in the city centre itself in a relatively, I suppose, not well-to-do situation, but he discovered, I remember hearing a documentary about him after he died, and he died in 1995 early. He had terrible problems with alcohol, but about his seeing a guitar in the window that he just had to have, and his mother saving up for him and buying it, and he really became one of the great Irish, anyway, blues guitarists, as you could hear there.
Yeah, definitely. So by this point, I guess we're in the late 60s. Is that correct?
Well, actually, that song, I think, is from about 1985.
Oh, 1985.
Yeah.
So, and you can definitely hear the blues influence and, like, the American rock influence. In what ways did that sort of music remain distinctly Irish despite American influence?
Well, I don't think it's a question of either or in some respects, but I think it's a sense. Ireland's a very small place, but it's had a long history for various reasons of connection to other places of the world. It's mm-hmm. never been an insular place, even though it's been an island.
Yeah.
And I guess Rory Gallagher, that idea of the American blues tradition was so important. The idea, I suppose, even going back to the idea of the Gospels, of the sense of liberation and freedom, no matter what the actual conditions of your life might be. And I think that was taken up a little bit even in other more, I suppose, famous Irish traditions like U2 and an album like the Joshua Tree, which they should have stopped after, I think.
Yeah. So speaking of U2, we've got a track by them coming up. But like you said, you feel as if they should have stopped right after Joshua Tree. What is the sentiment that you feel coming from Ireland about U2?
Well, I don't know if it's anything to do with being Irish or not. It's just a sense of...
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I know sometimes you know, if a band, quote-unquote, sells out, maybe their original fans feel a little bit betrayed or a little bit let down.
Sure. Yeah. I think they sold from the start, so I'm not sure there was ever any change.
The thing I guess
I love about this song, I still haven't found them looking for, is that connection between the American landscape, and also there's this kind of a very religious, I think, evocative, poetic language, and Bono, for all his mania, sometimes does get things very right, and I think this is, for me at least, one of those moments he does.
Yeah. Have you heard their newest album, Atomic Bomb?
No, I refuse.
Okay.
And you can't make me.
Fair enough. I can't argue with that, although... Off the air, I'm going to go pull that album. All right, but for now, we're going to listen to I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For by U2. This is the Global Music Show with Professor Nicholas Allen talking about Irish music, and thanks for listening. right, we just heard U2 off of their album Joshua Tree, and that was I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. But enough with U2. They've taken up their space in this show. Let's talk about some Irish punk rock and start off with the Undertones. Who are they?
Yeah, well, this might be, I suppose, a slightly curious tangent for those of you listening out there to think about Irish and punk rock together, but I know certainly whenever I was growing up in Belfast and all around that time, there were lots of famous bands like the Undertones and Stiff Little Fingers, and I think there was a lot of trouble, as I'm sure many of you are aware, in Ireland in the 1980s and 1970s, even up into the 1990s, and a lot of that energy, I think, that came from that fed its way into music, and we're going to listen to a great song by the Undertones, who were from Derry, a city which is more formally known as Londonderry, but they call it Stroke City because its Protestants want to call it Londonderry and nationalists who want to call it Derry, so there's a bit of a controversy even in the place name itself. But this is just a great slice of urban fun. It's called Teenage Kicks, and it's the best punk rock song you'll ever hear.
All right, well, that needs no more introduction. This is Teenage Kicks by the Undertones. Thanks for listening.
When I was a young man, I...
All right, we had a couple of technical difficulties there for just a second, but we'll get back with you with the Undertones in just a moment. Until then, let's see, we can listen to maybe something by the Stiff Little Fingers. Would that work?
CD, it's on the table. Play what you were going to play there.
Okay.
Why don't we play what we were going to play there? It's Waltzing Matilda by the Pogues, and then have a good laugh about this, because Sheena McGowan, their singer, was a famous wreck of a man, too.
All right. Well, let's do that. Okay, here comes Waltzing Matilda.
When I was a young man, I carried my pack, and I lived a free life of a rover. From the Murray Spring Basin to the dusty outback, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, son, it's time to stop rambling, there's work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat and they gave me a gun, and they sent me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as we sailed away from the quay. And amidst all the tears, the shouts and the cheers, we sailed off for Gallipoli. Now those who were living did their best to survive in that mad world of death, blood and fire. And for 7 long weeks I kept myself alive, though the corpses around me grew higher. Then a big Turkish shell knocked me earth over its head, and when I awoke in my hospital bed and saw what it had done, Christ, I wished I was dead. Never knew there were worse things than dying. And no more I'll go waltzing Matilda to the Greek bushes so far and near, for the hind tents and pegs and my knees two legs. No more waltzing Matilda. I see my old comrades, how proudly they march, reliving the dreams of past glory. I see the old man, all tattered and torn, the forgotten heroes of a forgotten war. And the young people ask me, what did they march for? And I ask myself the same question. And a band plays waltzing Matilda, and the old man still answered the call. But year after year, the numbers get fewer. Someday no one will march there at all. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, go waltzing Matilda.
So, what is Waltzing Matilda?
Well, as you probably gathered, that's a song about people who fought with the Australian forces in the First World War, particularly those around the Dardanelles and the Gallipoli campaign. But it's just this wonderful sense of the old military song, the military memory, being sung by a group called the Pogues, who were all from London, I think, but also of Irish descent. And so this is great, just one of those examples of the kind of the complicated genealogies of Irish music in some respects.
Yeah. In what ways is that song a reference to what happened at the Dardanelles?
Well, if you listen, the singer says that he got caught by a Turkish shell, and the melancholy, the regret of it all, is his injury after the war, the fact that he survived and so many people didn't.
Yeah.
But as many of these, I suppose, traumatic things, you asked me earlier what it was to do with the ballad,
mm-hmm.
and there is a way in which you can sing that which you can't talk about.
I see. Well, that's a testament to the powerful nature of the topic and the narrative. And now to switch it up entirely, let's check out some Irish punk rock. This, we're going to listen to Teenage Kicks by The Undertones off the album All Wrapped Up. And if you've never seen this album, I recommend you check out the cover. Well worth your look.
You don't mean that?
I do. I mean that with all my heart. Check out this album. All wrapped up by The Undertones. All right, here it is. You're listening to The Global Music Show on WXYZ.
Kicks right through the night.
All right.
was the Undertones with Teenage Kicks. And so what was the punk rock culture in Ireland like at the time this came out?
Yeah, well, I suppose I came into it a little bit later than that, and I suppose in the mid to late 80s in that sense. But these bands are really formative to our sense of the place, I suppose. I mean, if you watched the news every night, it was a rather kind of grim existence, it would appear. But in fact, if you went to the clubs and the art college, was a great place to go and see concerts and listen to these records, are full of vim and vigour and I suppose a certain kind of resistant energy.
Yeah.
As we're going to hear now, whenever we get to Suspect Device by Stiff Little Fingers, and Suspect Device is something that you're meant to find like a package that looks like a bomb, but it's transforming the song into something else entirely.
All right, well, here we go then. Suspect Device by Stiff Little Fingers. Thanks for listening to WXYC. Stiff Little Fingers with Suspect Device. That track came out in 1979, and to me that sounds really really raucous and hardcore for something from 1979.
Yeah, well, I apologize for those of you who've been tuning in to listen to Irish traditional music, but to me, I guess I'm sitting here with a grin all the way across my face hearing that being played again. And the idea that why can't they leave it to us? Why can't we take it over and we'll put it right? There's just such a great kind of utopian energy about the whole thing. And
yeah, definitely.
Energy, it's great fun.
Is there any are there any bands that are carrying on that tradition like right now in Ireland?
In that vein particularly, no, I can't think of one offhand, I must say. I mean, I guess I suppose some of that energy went off into the Boston scene with we were talking about the Dropkick Murphys before.
Yeah.
And also House of Pain, so maybe it went across the Atlantic in some ways, as these things do.
Yeah. A lot of cultural exchange going on there.
Yeah, yeah. And now we're going to go off somewhere entirely different.
Yeah, we're going to take it back down a notch. We're going to listen to Molly Bawn by the Dubliners, and this came out in the 60s. Can you speak a little bit more about the Dubliners? We started out the show with a track by them called The Rising of the Moon. What's Molly Bawn about?
Well, Molly Bawn is a form of farewell song. It's about the accidental death of the beloved, and it will sound entirely different from Stiff Little Fingers, but I guess I just wanted to begin the leaving, our parting, as we come up towards 6 o'clock with that more traditional form of goodbye. And I think they did have, again, some of that kind of plugged in energy to the audience that you might have heard of Stiff Little Fingers and the Undertones.
Great. Well, here it is, Molly Bawn by the Dubliners.
Oh, come all you late fowlers that follows the gun, beware of night's rambling by the setting of the sun. Beware of an accident has happened of late. It was Molly Bon Larry, and sad was her fate. She'd been gone to her uncle's when a star of it came on. She drew under a green bush the shower partition, with her white apron wrapped around her. He took her for a swan, took aim, and alas, it was his own Molly Bon. Oh, young Jimmy ran homeward with his gun and his dog, saying, "Uncle, oh, Uncle, I have shot Molly Bon. I have killed that fair female, the joy of my life. But I'd always intended that she would be my wife." Oh, young Jimmy Randlin, do not run away. Stay in your own country till your trial it comes on. Why, you'll never be convicted of the shooting of a swan. Well, the night before Molly's funeral, her ghost it did appear, saying, "Uncle, dearest uncle, I'll let young Jimmy run clear." It'd been late of an evening, well, he took me for a swan, took aim, and alas, he killed his own Molly Bon. Now all the girls of this country, they seem to be glad. Now the flower of Glenara, Molly Bon, she lies dead. Get all the girls of this country and stand them into a row. Molly Bon would shine among them like a fountain of snow.
We just heard Molly Bon performed by the Dubliners. No, not yet. Not yet.
It's not the kind of song that you could have written in North Carolina. I think it's too sunny. You have to have that melancholy strain of the rain to be able to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. Could you speak about any connection there might be between James Joyce and the Dubliners?
Well, of course, in the title, I guess, is something we should have mentioned earlier, but James Joyce's great early short story collection, Dubliners, which was meant to capture the paralysis of that city as he saw it, certainly brought the more kinetic life, I think, in the Dubliners as a band. But there's definitely always been a close tradition between the lyric, the literary, and the musical.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I noticed that as well, like, the literary tradition of Ireland seems to be closely connected with its musical tradition, and I wonder if we can see that perhaps in any way in the next track that we're going to listen to, which is Repeal of the Union by Alton.
Yeah, well, I guess the Act of Union in 1800 was that dissolution of the Irish Parliament, and this is an old collection of 19th century tunes that Alton, a wonderful band from Donegal in the north of Ireland, put together.
Mm-hmm.
And before we wrap up and go into that, I should say that the privilege of my being here is to do with the Centre for European Studies, one of the university's great institutions, and I'm very grateful to Ruth Pitts and all those wonderful people who work with her for what they do.
All right. Well, without further ado, let's check out Repeal of the Union by Alton. Thanks for listening to the Global Music Show on WXYC 89.3 FM.